I do get folks who are in the first, few months of the first year or two or whatever, but most of the time it's people who've been in the relationship for years. You know, as I've worked with folks who've been together for 50 years plus.
Yeah.
And they're talking about a variety of things, but often what they're noting is somewhere along the way, what started out as hot and sexy and passionately connected has ended up sort of cold and dead. And, you know, sometimes you could say, well, yeah, that's a result of all the fighting you're doing.
Right.
But sometimes there's a piece of it that's like as much the other way around. No, you're fighting all the time because you're not connecting passionately.
Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. Our topic for today is...
7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Ooh, nice topic. Well, this one was my idea, and I will be explaining why we are choosing to focus, especially, you know, our 7 words from our 7 word podcast, of course, on jumpstarting your love life in particular. So we'll come back around to that in just a little bit.
All right.
First, let's put in a word for the most recent book that came out, which is...
Yes, It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
The number one Amazon bestseller in its category.
Yes.
And we want to keep it that way. And
yes, we do.
Make it be that way again, more
accurately. Thank you to our many listeners who did make it that, and keep it going.
Keep it going. And that's available in any format you like. You can find it, of course, on Amazon. We do want to have people do reviews, too, by the way, folks. If you're one of the wonderful people who have already got the book, please go to Amazon.com, leave a review, and let's mention the other book you can also find there or anywhere else books are sold.
Yes, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
Indeed. And you can also get to those books at our podcast website. And Judy, tell folks what our podcast website is.
It is ctin7.com. That's the number 7, the numeral 7. CT as in couples therapy, ctin7.com.
ctin7.com. When you go there, you'll have access to all of our episodes. You're listening to this one on whatever platform, but you can find all of the episodes there. And you can also find our...
Merch!
We've got merch. We've got beautiful t-shirts and tote bags
and mugs.
And mugs.
In 2 sizes, I might add.
What is it, 11 ounces and 15 ounces?
Correct.
For all of your drinking needs, I guess. And it has on all of this merchandise, what it has on it is...
our beautiful logo and the 7 word, Be Kind, Don't Panic, and Have Faith on one side.
And so that is, you know, sure to become, if not a collector's item, it's going to become something that will, you know, mark you as in the know about this podcast and about the ideas that are behind it, which are, I'm sure, spreading like wildfire or wildflowers, either way, as we speak.
Yes. And they make wonderful gifts. The tote bag is really nice and lightweight and good for toting around all your books and mugs.
It is. And, you know, we did check out the... You know, the company that makes these things, we checked out the merchandise
and found
it's very high quality. So you can find that.
You're not getting schlock.
At ctn7.com and go to the shop tab, and that's how you can shop for that merchandise. So, Judy, let's talk about
this topic. Let's talk about 7 words to jumpstart your love life. What might those 7 words be, Bruce?
Gee whiz, funny you should ask. The 7 words are indeed, as you already just mentioned, be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And if those of you who are long-term loyal listeners to this podcast may remember way back in episode 1, that's where we explained the 7 words, and we've had lots of other opportunities along the way to, you know, talk about where they came from. I can give you a little brief summary on that. It was a formula I cooked up in response to a question early on in my private practice. I've been in private practice 28 years, so I'm thinking something like 25 years ago. And a colleague said, how do you do couples therapy anyway? And, you know, I gave it some thought, and that's what I came up with. I said, essentially, if you boil it all down, what I'm telling folks is be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And they do fit together. Be kind in the sense of be not merely be nice, but be kin. That's really mm-hmm. the key, and we'll come back to that concept. And you can't do that if you're in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
So don't panic is what lets you be kind.
Mm-hmm.
And then people were asking me, well, great, thanks a lot. How do I not panic? And you know what I realized was that the folks who seem to be able to handle the hard stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm meeting a couple and there's been infidelity or there's been some kind of other betrayal or there's been just a lot of conflict or there's been these awful, difficult family issues or deal breakers or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some couples that could handle that. They obviously didn't handle it with comfort because it's really hard stuff, but they could somehow manage the anxiety and look courageously at what they needed to look at.
Hmm.
And there were other folks that just seemed to freak out and just said, make it go away.
Yeah.
And that, of course, doesn't work. You
no,
can't make it go away.
No, it doesn't go away.
It arises for a good reason. And the folks who could handle it,
yeah.
I was trying to think, what is it that sets them apart? And
yeah.
You know, I searched around for the right word to describe it, and I came up with faith. And I don't mean religious faith necessarily, but what I mean by faith is that sense that it's a mindset, it's an orientation to the world that says, you know, there's a lot of pain in this world, and there's also a lot of joy in this world, but it's all right to be what it is somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to work with it as part of it, and you know, I'm going to do my all to make it better. But I'm going to accept the reality that, not merely accepting reality in sort of dreary resignation, but accepting that reality is right
yeah.
to be what it is. That's what I mean by
so faith. If that's good for couples therapy, how does it fit in to jumpstart your love life? When
well,
you say jumpstart, are you in a relationship already or are you looking for a relationship? So what do you mean by seven words to jumpstart your love life?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, when I thought of that particular title, I was thinking of people who are in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But let me say a couple words about people who are not in relationships and would like to be. These same seven words are really a helpful guideline for people who are looking to be in a relationship precisely because you need to have that sense of faith in your own validity
mm-hmm.
so that you will be able to decide for yourself if something is good for you or not. That's how you have, you know, that's how you can perceive the red flags and, you know, respectfully avoid them.
Yeah.
Rather than getting caught, you know, people who feel desperate for a relationship are in, it doesn't work out very well usually because they will miss some really sign, you know, some signs that somebody just isn't the right person for them.
Sure.
So certainly the seven words are very useful for that. But I was especially thinking of, really what I was thinking of are what I see so often in my office, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do I get in my office? People come to me, they're couples, you know, I'm a couples therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sometimes fairly new in the relationship, but most of the time not. You know, I do get folks who are in the first, you know, few months of the first year or two
mm-hmm.
or whatever, but most of the time it's people who've been in the relationship for years. You know, as I've worked with folks who've been together for 50 years plus.
Yeah.
And they're talking about a variety of things, but often what they're noting is somewhere along the way, what started out as hot and sexy and passionately connected
mm-hmm.
has ended up sort of cold and dead.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes you could say, well, yeah, that's a result of all the fighting you're doing.
Right.
But sometimes there's a piece of it that's like as much the other way around. No, you're fighting all the time because you're not connecting passionately.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say connecting passionately, I don't just mean sex.
Right.
You know, and I use the word love life, not sex life.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't just trying to use a euphemism.
Sure.
I mean it more generally. Passionate connection is more, way more than just, you know, the physical acts involved in sex. And
yeah.
couples that have that going for them tend to be doing better in other ways, and couples that are doing better in other ways tend to have that going for them. You know what I mean?
It's yeah, well, it kind of feeds off each other, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does.
Yeah. So, you know, I know often relationships, people are so busy, and whether it's work or kids, everybody's doing their own thing and going off in different directions. So it is hard to reconnect, and sometimes you do lose that connection.
Yeah.
So where does the be kind, don't panic, and have faith part come in?
Well, so let me start from the beginning there. Yeah, there's three principles there, be kind, don't panic, and have faith, right? Be kind is sort of what you're doing when you're connected.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that sense of kinship,
mm-hmm.
then what people will tend to do is view each other with care rather than suspicion. That's the difference between viewing someone as kin and someone as not kin. You know, someone that
people treat their kin pretty badly.
I do point that out. Actually, let me toss in right now. Another reason why we're doing this now is I just so happen to be writing another, well, I'm not calling it a book because it's too short to be a book. It's a booklet, which will be available, folks, free of charge, at least initially, free of charge.
Ooh,
all you have to do, you sign up for my newsletter, you're going to get this book. It's not done yet. I'll let you know when it's done. But it's, and the title of the book is Seven Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life, right? So I do address this in that book. And indeed, people can be horrible to their kin. But they only get horrible to their kin when something major happens, or they experience something major is happening. That, in other words, the predilection people have, is, at least from the start, when you perceive someone as kin, like your family, is that, well, we're in the same tribe. They may be mean to each other in a variety of ways, but when you know that phenomenon, yes, we fight like dogs and cats, you know, I'm thinking about siblings, you know, but when push comes to shove, we have each other's back,
right?
You know, it's that phenomenon. It's that bit about, well, we're still family, even if we're really annoyed with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of kinship in a couple is, you know, I'm claiming that's why people want to stay together,
mm-hmm.
because they experience, because we want that, you know,
right.
as a species, we want that.
Yeah.
We want to hook up with somebody, and when I say hook up, I don't just mean in the crass sense of, you know, empty
right.
sex. We want to pair up with someone.
Pair up is a better word.
Yeah, we want to form a couple with someone, a bond with someone,
mm-hmm.
with whom we feel that sense of kinship.
Right.
And, you know, I will comment, I mentioned this in this little book I'm writing too. Actually, I mentioned in the books I've written too, particularly the Reigniting the Spark, I talk about this. Marriage, as opposed to merely being in love and living together,
mm-hmm.
marriage is a lot about promoting a relationship from voluntary to kinship. Because kinship, you know, you think about the family you're born into, mm-hmm. that's not an optional relationship.
Right.
It's optional how much you see them. You can cut them off if you want, but they're still your family.
Right.
And when you get married to someone, the externals of that are very powerful, that are basically saying you're not just, you know, a couple of people who happen to enjoy each other and are staying together because you enjoy each other. You're now kin with each other. And we're all going to treat you as kin. And that's a significant difference. So that sense of kinship, be kind, is, I think, that's what keeps people together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I pointed out, if you're in a panic, it's very difficult to be kind.
Right.
And the classic scenario that happens in many, many relationships, and it's really the whole topic of that first book, Reigniting the Spark, is all about this. The subtitle on that one is Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. What happens when you form a relationship with someone and it becomes more and more important that you have a stable base for it? You know, you do things like get married and live together and have children, especially having children. Stability becomes really important.
Mm-hmm.
And what people will tend to do is focus just on stability. And unfortunately, what gets lost there, and this is kind of what you were alluding to earlier, you know, you have kids, you have busy lives, you're focusing on all these elements of stability, and stability is important.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is people will tend to ignore intimacy. Because, as I've pointed out in many other podcasts, I won't go into a lot of depth on this, intimacy requires that you tolerate anxiety.
Yeah.
To be honest with your partner sometimes is lovely. If, you know, if what I want to tell you is just how much I love you and how beautiful you are, which I like to think I tell you a lot because I feel that way a lot. That's great. If what I want to tell you, well, I never tell you, I have no complaints about you, but you have complaints about me occasionally. Well-founded, I hasten to add. And when you complain about me, you know, you don't know that I'll be nice about hearing it, or, you know, you hope I will. And so that involves raising anxiety. You know, gee,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to nag you, but something's bothering me. I want to bring it up. That's raising your anxiety. Maybe you're worried it's going to raise my anxiety. You don't know how I'll react, or at
mm-hmm.
least early in a relationship, people don't know how they'll react.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is they will tend not to risk that anxiety. And that is essentially attenuating, at least, and possibly cutting off intimacy.
Yeah.
And it often shows up in a couple's sex life.
Yeah. And, you know, we've all seen those couples out in public, you know, the way that they're talking to each other, you just know they're constantly fighting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And the and I want to throw another variable on there.
Yeah.
Yes, you see those, although some of them.
Yeah.
Am I just making this up? You tell me what you think.
Okay.
You see some couples that, like, you can tell they're bickering all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll bet they're having a lot of sex.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
As opposed to the ones you look at who are bickering, and you can say, "Oh my God, they can barely stand each other."
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, talking to each other with a nasty tone of voice,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and not even being civil. And,
yeah.
You know, if that's how you're treating your spouse, it's like, wow, you know, you wouldn't treat your people at work that way, I hope, or
yeah.
You wouldn't treat, you know, strangers that way. Why would you treat your partner that way?
Well, and you know, that's one of my favorite little, what I claim is a myth to debunk, because
mm-hmm.
people will often say, yeah, why would you treat, you know, the people closest to you? And they'll say, well, because you feel safest with the people closest to you.
Mm-hmm.
That just sounds like nonsense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but that's nonsense. If you feel safe with someone, why would you be nasty?
Yeah.
It's actually the opposite. The people who are the most important to you are the ones who make you feel least safe. And I'm not talking about abuse here. I'm talking about make you feel most scared that you're going to lose them.
Yeah. So that's where your be kind part comes in, you know.
Absolutely.
You've got to be kind to those folks.
And the problem is, if you're in a panic worrying about the fact that, oh no, I think I'm going to lose you,
mm-hmm.
it's really difficult to be kind.
Mm-hmm.
You click into fight or flight or freeze mode,
mm-hmm.
none of which are conducive to actually being kind, especially when it comes to intimacy. You know, tolerating the anxiety of intimacy. It's like, wow, I need to listen to you when you have something to say to me that may be uncomfortable. And if I'm panicking, I'm not going to listen.
Yeah, well, who would want to be intimate with somebody who's always picking on you and making you feel bad, right?
Well, precisely.
Yeah.
And it tends to snowball.
Yes.
And it's funny, I just had this two different couples this week, it's funny, I had a fairly light week in terms of load, so two is probably a small number in a given week, to have this same conversation where
mm-hmm.
one of them is the one that when they have some sort of argument, they are insisting, we have to work this out. They want to keep talking. And the other is the one that when they have some sort of argument is saying, I just need to clear my head. I need to get a break. Don't stop talking.
Yeah.
And they will, that gets into a really toxic flow.
Yeah, sure.
And that can lead to violence. I mean, that's a dangerous, cycle,
mm-hmm.
and very, very common.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is it common that two people just differ on that one, you know,
sure.
but they amplify the difference.
Well, yeah, because if you're the person that wants to be heard and has to be heard, it's very frustrating not to be heard. And if you're the one that needs the space, you don't want somebody yakking in your ear. And
that's,
you know,
right. And so the reaction of the person who doesn't want the one yakking in the ear is to push them away literally or figuratively, which drives the other person to just be louder and
right,
more insistent.
Right, or just, you know, leave the room or whatever it is to separate yourself,
yeah,
from that.
Yeah.
Or yell and just say, leave me the F alone, you
yeah.
know?
They have a hard time with that, let's
mm-hmm.
put it that way. It is a tricky thing because, you know, neither side of that is wrong, but
right.
they are just...
It's different styles.
It's different styles, but they don't mix well.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to, you know, the notion of don't panic. How do you manage to do that? And another way of saying don't panic is get hold of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about that very scenario we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Where they're having a fight and one of them is just needing it to not be happening and the other is needing it to go to resolution.
Right.
And it's escalating. And what they need to be able to do to get a hold of themselves is have some faith
mm-hmm.
that this is soluble even though they don't know how yet.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by have faith. That basic sense that, no, you know, relationships can work. Even if ours isn't at the moment, relationships can work. Even in fact, even ours can work because it has, hasn't it? You know, it's that sort of feeling
mm-hmm.
of faith. And the folks who can manifest that sort of faith, it turns out that's the antidote to panic.
Yeah.
They're not panicking when they're showing that kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the weak, the fly in the ointment, or the weak link in the chain, that's a better metaphor, is, you want to guess? That's why I say, okay, so be kind, of course.
Right.
Don't panic so you can be kind, right?
Uh-huh.
How do you don't panic? Well, you have to have faith.
Right.
So now what's the problem?
How do you have faith?
There's the weak link in the chain. Yeah, I say it's weak link. Because it's almost like my number one best answer, which kind of sucks, is just have it. Any questions? Which is ridiculous, right? What I claim is it's a skill that you can practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm claiming. As opposed to a knowledge you can acquire. Do you know what I mean? It's not something you can be convinced of. There's no evidence for it or against it, because it isn't a question of, you know, what are the facts? You know, science is about what the facts are. This isn't a scientific question. This isn't like, well, I can prove to you with the following data that faith is the way to go. No, I can't. I can't do that at all. Mm-hmm. I did say, by the way, in my most recent book, and it's not about communication, I said, no, there's no way I can prove to you that you should have faith, because it's a decision. It's an orientation to the world. It's, you know, it's a value judgment.
Right.
What I can do is offer data that people who have faith are happier. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of data on that. I actually wrote it, it's funny, I didn't remember this until I was writing about it in the most recent book. Uh-huh. 40 years ago.
Yeah.
My God,
wow,
40 years ago. Is it 40 years
yeah.
ago? It is damn near 40. It is over 40 years ago. Holy
oh, wow.
cow. 40 years ago, as part of my work at the University of Vermont, when I was a statistician and I was working on my PhD in psychology, but I was mm-hmm. a statistician. And I was working on a project, and one of the things I wrote was a paper that is published. I'm second author because I wasn't the principal investigator in the study, but it was my paper. And I wrote a paper about how religion in people with advanced cancer, they were functioning better. They had a better
yeah,
quality of life.
Yeah, yeah.
So
there's been a lot of studies on that.
There have been.
Yeah.
And it's often they're focused on religion, but mm-hmm. you can say it's not so much religion per se, it's that orientation toward faith.
Mm-hmm.
It says, no, this whole business, life and death and all of it, are fundamentally a good thing. That's what I mean by faith. And I can say that, well, there's good evidence that it makes you happier, but that doesn't convince it to you if you say, well, that's nonsense. You know, I think as far as I can tell, the world sucks. You know, I'm claiming that's a decision. You can look at the same data and say, well, yeah, is there bad stuff in the world? Of course there is. There's pain, there's war, there's death, there's horrible things. Are there good things in the world? Well, of course there is. I think even people who would say that, you know, the world fundamentally sucks would say that there are some good things.
Mm-hmm.
But faith would say the whole project's good. And that changes how you view pretty much everything. Now, what does this have to do, you may be wondering, with your love life?
Right.
I claim
yes.
everything.
Ah.
Because what is it that makes for a passionate connection? What makes for a passionate connection is tolerating anxiety. And here I want to give a shout out to an author, Jack Morin, M-O-R-I-N, who wrote a book, which frankly, I haven't read the whole thing yet. I just got it. But I've seen it quoted many, many times, called The Erotic Mind, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And he has a little equation that lots of people have quoted. He says, attraction plus obstacles equals excitement.
Uh-huh.
That's the erotic equation.
Yeah.
And in other words, for something to be erotically exciting,
yeah.
there has to be an obstacle.
Really?
And the obstacle is often unpredictability. Again, sometimes the obstacle is, oh my God, I want to win you over and I see that you're not sure. And, you know, and I'm not talking about, God forbid, you know, overcoming an obstacle by violence. I'm talking about by just being so charming you can barely stand it, you know? Seducing someone, in all the best senses of the word,
mm-hmm.
seducing someone is not about making them feel comfortable. It's actually about increasing their anxiety. It's about saying, oh my God, I can barely stand not having you. Right? That's
mm-hmm.
what seduction
that's true.
Is.
Yeah.
So erotic charge is a lot about having a tolerance for that level of uncertainty and desire. Desire itself is an obstacle. Desire, it's like, oh, I want something I don't have now.
Yeah.
And that to tolerate that feeling, and look, people who write about ways of having ecstatic sex
mm-hmm.
will talk about letting the charge build up. You know, the thing about quickies is they don't let the charge build up, so they're not apt to be nearly as intense. Maybe they can be, but you know, that ability to let the charge build up over time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a couple that has a really passionate connection,
mm-hmm.
they're having foreplay when they're doing the dishes. It's, do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah, I do.
There's always that, and I think we know because we know what we're talking about. That sense of...
we know from whence we speak.
We know from whence we speak, yeah. And look, folks, you don't mind my saying your age. I'm 71 and Judy's 65. We are not spring chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, that's another thing I like to point out. You know, that concept that, oh, well, you only ever feel that really hot connection, you know, when it's a new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. We are, as we're recording this, we are just about to celebrate 20 years together.
Yeah.
And I'll just say, without revealing more than I feel like revealing, it has, the passionate connection has not only not faded, I think it's become more intense.
I think so.
Yeah, that's so, you know, that's a function. And here I will shout out to David Schnarch, the late couples therapist who used to write about this stuff. The desire at that, you know, passionate desire and passionate connection is a function of maturity, mm-hmm. which is all about tolerating anxiety.
Right. Yeah, hopefully you get to that point if you don't have it earlier.
That, yeah. Well, and that's another thing. You know, I describe this sort of death spiral for passion that happens when people sort of don't want to rock the boat.
Right.
And they don't risk the anxiety of intimacy.
Right.
And so intimacy
yeah,
just
so
kind
they
of
have
dies.
Stability, but no intimacy.
Exactly. And that happens. And folks who are able to escape that cycle, and I think, again, we're an example of this as well, often had to learn. I think the skills of intimacy are not something you're necessarily born with. They're not something you necessarily just pick up from your environment.
Right.
You know, people who are fortunate enough to have had parents that just seem to have that going for them, that's just a lovely thing.
Right.
And but not everybody does.
And I can't think of anybody who modeled that. You know, when I hear stories from my friends and, you know, you think that their parents, you go to somebody's house, you think their parents have this wonderful marriage, especially if you're coming from a home where your parents weren't, or maybe you didn't even have two parents. Mm-hmm. So you always think, and then you hear, no, things weren't always that, you know, sweet.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, people don't necessarily learn these skills just by growing up. Mm-hmm. And so you encounter it in relationships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're an example, and I know plenty of other couples like this.
Yeah.
We're a second marriage. Where we both benefited greatly by what we went through in our first marriages.
Right.
And I say that without disparaging our exes at all.
Right, and sometimes that's what it takes, is you have to go through that and and decide you don't want to go through that again.
Yeah, and right. What it allows, certainly my own experience, what it allows for is much greater tolerance of anxiety, because you've been through some really hard stuff if mm-hmm. you've been through a marriage that hasn't worked out.
Right.
And that can be, if it doesn't sour you on the whole project, mm-hmm. that can be really instructive.
Yes.
So that, in a nutshell, that's why the seven words, be kind, don't panic, and have faith, have everything to do with jumpstarting your love life. And to do this, look, what I claim, I'm not going to sit here and say, as so many people seem to say, oh, you just keep repeating these seven words and everything will magically turn into wonderful for you. Mm-hmm. No, it won't. You actually have to do the work, mm-hmm. it turns out.
Yes.
And the stuff you have to face is scary, because that's why you haven't been able to face it, right? You're not crazy. That's another statement of faith, by the way. You're not crazy, and your spouse isn't, or your partner isn't crazy either, probably. You know, maybe they are, but highly unlikely. You know, many more people say their partners are crazy than, in fact, have crazy partners.
Yes.
It's not that they're crazy, it's that it's not working out with them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it's scary. You're going to have to face the scary. But what this little mantra, be kind, don't panic, have faith, and have faith, to get seven words in there, be kind, don't panic, and have faith, what that does for you is it helps you focus on what you need to do to face that fear. So I want to put in a plug now for a ridiculous video I made just a couple weeks ago, or a week or two ago, a sort of TikTok style video of me doing a be kind, don't panic, and have faith rap.
It's very funny, folks.
I think it's
hilarious.
You gotta check it out. So we'll put in the notes for this episode where to go for that. But you know, you can always find it. I'll put something right on our ctn7.com homepage.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to find that. You'll put a link to it, mm-hmm. and you'll be able to enjoy that, or at least laugh at it or something. and I think, you know, I think the rap part is kind of catchy.
I
enjoyed that.
Yes.
And by the way, those of you who are like on TikTok, you're welcome to, you know, take the sound and do your own dance to it. I'm hoping it'll be a trend, you know?
Yeah, send it to us. We'll make a video out of it. Or post your own.
Indeed.
All right. Well, I hope if you want to jumpstart your love life, just remember to be kind, don't panic, and have faith. And I want to put in another plug for our podcast, of course, that you're listening to, and for the book, It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong, and signing up for Bruce's latest newsletter.
That's right, the newsletter. And when you sign up for the newsletter, now this may or may not happen by the time you're hearing this, but I'm going to say it anyway. When you sign up for the newsletter, that will make you eligible to get a free, that means free, that means like no cost, copy of this new booklet that's going to come out, which is called Indeed, 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life. And it has all kinds of like
nice pictures. Yes, so you can read more about it there.
You can read more about it there, indeed. And I would also like to invite you to review and rate and do, you know, let people know about this podcast so that others will find out about it.
And if you would like to be on our podcast, or if you know somebody who would like to be in our podcast, you can go to ctn7.com and there's a place where you can sign up for that.
And if you have a question, those of you who've listened to lots of our podcasts will know when we interview folks, especially, we will often have a listener question to, you know, pose to the person we're interviewing. And we are always looking for more listener questions. So please send us your questions, and you can do that right from ctn7.com, or you can email us through ctn7.com. That's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.